Welcome to the chat with Father Matt. Every week we'll chat about the faith with various people. We plan to keep the show light and interesting, and we'll even sometimes get off topic, but we'll always try to be a beacon of light. If you have a subject you'd like to discuss on the show, just send us an email at vicar@fortrecoverycatholics.org or Facebook at Fort Recovery Catholic Cluster. And welcome back to the chat with Father Matt. I assume this might be the last part, but part four of chatting with Rocker, or interview with Rocker, however you want to kind of call it, the Mike Wallace of our Fort Recovery interview team. So, Rocker, welcome back. Good to be with you again.
Yes, welcome. It's fun doing this, actually.
I am impressed and excited that we can get all this stuff out here and have these good conversations.
I think people are hopefully learning something from these.
I hope you're learning something.
Yes, I.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I'm
sure. That's why you had the questions, so we can get the answers, right?
Try to make these as smart as possible.
Oh, no, you're doing great.
Okay, we'll go with some little light.
All right. He likes the light, and then he goes to the dark.
Real quick. What was the best and worst movie you've ever seen?
Ooh, best and worst movie I've ever seen. So I'd say Forrest Gump is my favorite movie that I've ever seen. I don't know. It's just kind of cool to see him go through all that time of history, but also just kind of, I don't know, not reliving because I was born in 1982, but seeing that history in a perspective of just kind of a simple guy and how many things he went through. And, you know, there's always a little love story in there too, makes things go well. But I like most Tom Hanks movies. But worst movie, nothing really comes to the top of my head. What's your worst movie?
Oh, Lord. I don't know how I've made it through it, but Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh, yeah? Was that bad?
It was so bad that you can tell how bad the writing was in this movie. I mean, it was... And that and the fact that we almost believed that you had to be on something to understand it.
Wow. I mean, I seen a couple of those. It wasn't Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, those are hot.
But it was like in the movie theater. I went to Piqua with a couple of my friends. And those movies, I mean, I can't remember what they were. But like the only thing that made those that good was obviously the commentary by those Mystery Science Theater guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very entertaining. But I can't believe people actually made the movies that were produced out there.
We'll go with do you and Father Ned, have you had that knockdown drag out arguments?
No, definitely not. I mean, is it entertaining to have conversations with Father Ned, learn about his childhood and growing up and his priesthood of previous assignments and things like that. But I think we agree for the most part on most of the stuff we chat with. I mean, there's definitely stories of yesteryear priests, you know, 1950s and previously, that the pastor was not kind at all to the new associate and would make either like lock him out of the rectory because he like missed curfew or made him like paint the whole house or things like that. Like they really didn't get along well, or they just felt like the priest wasn't doing much, so they made him do other things instead. But Father Ned has been very gracious in all of his dealings with me and really helped me kind of become the priest that I am and kind of let me, I don't know, do things on my own, but also give me advice when advice is needed.
What is the age difference between the two of you?
I think he will be 53 in June, and I just turned 35, so almost 20 years.
So he's been at it a while.
Yeah, he was ordained a priest in, I think, December of 98. So he'll be a priest of 20 years and 18 months. So, and I'm coming on my first year of ordination on Sunday, so only, you know, 360-something days that I have. But I haven't been here since, well, I've been here since July, so.
Okay. In the Old Testament.
Yes.
Oh, here I go. I go right for the kill.
Oh, well.
In the Old Testament, did they know Jesus was coming?
So there was many, many prophets and many, many things that foretold of the Messiah coming to earth. So as Jesus Christ, as him, they did not know specifically it was going to be him, because most of the Jews kind of missed it and didn't think he was the Messiah, because he didn't come as this powerful king to kind of free them from all of the oppression that they experienced in their lives. But yes, in the Old Testament, they knew that there was going to be a Savior. They knew that there was a Messiah going to go, and that would have been the full fulfillment of Judaism. So Christianity is a fulfillment of Judaism, because it completed what they're looking forward to. But the Jews today are still looking for that Messiah to come.
Okay, how long were the Old Testaments written before Jesus came along?
I know, like, Maccabees is the last books in the Bible. That would have been the last ones written. I don't think there's a whole lot of time between that and when Jesus was born. But don't give me, I don't know the dates too well. But yeah, maybe 200 to 400 years when Jesus came, when the last book was written in Judaism. I wish I would have paid attention more of my Old Testament classes.
testing you out here.
Yeah, man. It's like I'm back in seminary again. I'm not just preaching homilies like I am in Help Before Recovery.
Is it possible that Catholics in South America are more religious than the U.S.?
I mean, they have a great devotion, specifically to Mary. Well, I mean, Our Lady of Guadalupe for sure in Mexico. There are so many people that converted to Catholicism because the apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe. To Juan Diego. But every country and every little area in Central and South America have some sort of connection to Our Lady. There's some seminarians from Honduras that came up and studied with us in Cincinnati, and there was Our Lady of Tepeyac that would, I'm not even sure if I said that right, but they have this great devotion to Our Lady, and Our Lady intercedes to our Lord for everything that they could ever ask for. And they just really, really, I don't know, see her as their mother and the mother of the church. But so I'd say in devotion, yeah, maybe the Central American, South Americans are more, but catechized, like actually knowing the faith, I wouldn't say that they're more catechized than us. But there's definitely the population wise, the numbers are bigger. I mean, Brazil, I think, is 90% Catholic.
Now, when I was a kid, I heard this phrase a lot, and I mean a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Are fallaway Catholics truly Catholic?
So, if you become baptized in the Catholic Church, there's not really a way for you to leave the church. You could have done it under a formal act of, like, writing a letter to the bishop and saying, I am no longer Catholic, and they would accept that, and then you'd go away or not be Catholic anymore. But Pope Benedict, when he was Pope, he said that Catholics are always Catholics, so there's never a point that you can't come back to the faith. There might be, you know, some little hurdles that you might have got to go through if you had a marriage and then remarried. You might have to seek an annulment, but come to confession, talk to a priest, and you are more than welcome to join us back in the faith. It's not us that are holding you back. It's, I think, our the people that haven't been haven't been to church for a long time that are holding themselves back. So, and it's probably tough to do that, to come back to the faith after a really long time. But some people don't necessarily feel that compelled to come back to the faith because they just are kind of fine in their own situation or whatever they're dealing with, or they're kind of, they just say they were lazy and never kind of felt the need for church and just kind of drifted away. But they can always come back. And I'm seeing more and more those that have that are coming back to get married, to encourage them to come back to church. And, you know, if you want to get married in the church, you should probably be active in doing stuff in the church. So, but no, God is always ready to welcome his children back into his church. And he could do that through the sacraments.
I'm going to make a formal apology, right?
Is that right?
I'm hoping this is the last time I ask this these questions, but is the priest, with the priest shortage, is it less likely the diocese will allow or accommodate a priest who wants to transfer?
Like to a different diocese, or what do you mean?
Let's say he's uncomfortable in the situation. And he doesn't like the area. Is it possible they would accommodate a transfer?
I mean, at least our bishop, Archbishop Schnur, is very forgiving and open to helping his priest be the best priest that they can be. So if the priests feel like they can't handle a situation that they're in, he doesn't want his priest to be unhappy and then, you know, make the whole parish unhappy. So he'll try to do whatever he can to help that priest out, either maybe having him take a little leave of absence, or when assignments change, have him go to another place that might be a better fit. But it is kind of difficult for the bishop to, with the lower numbers, to keep on moving those chess pieces around, those checker pieces, to find the right fits for all the priests and all the parishes. So, I mean, it's exciting to hear that Father Dorn is coming back to our area. He's going to be at Holy Redeemer in New Bremen. I know there was a little bit of kerfuffle when he left Fort Recovery, but hopefully
he's... Kerfuffle?
Yeah. I don't know what that word means, but it seems like there's some little difficulties between the two. He went down to Covington, and I think he realized the grass wasn't always greener on the other side. So there's something special about this northern area, so hopefully he can come back and serve the people of God and Holy Redeemer well.
So there was no chance that he would be assigned back here?
Probably not. Usually you don't get assigned back to a parish once you were assigned previously. And also you don't really get assigned to a parish that you like grew up in. So I grew up at St. Thomas More in Withensville. I most likely will never be assigned there. Deacon Peter Langenkamp, soon to be Father Peter Langenkamp, on Saturday. May 20th. He's from Coldwater Holy Trinity, so he'll never be assigned to that parish, just because it's probably weird coming back to your hometown. Now you're being the boss and taking charge and stuff, and people might not take you as seriously as you could be.
Oh, this is pretty heavy.
Oh man, heavy rocker.
Is it true that babies that are abused and killed have a direct passage to heaven?
I would say anyone that's innocent that hasn't sinned has, yeah, they're going to be with God because they did nothing to reject their path to God. There was some thought that if the baby wasn't baptized, they entered in this place called limbo. But the church doesn't really, and they didn't really know what limbo was. They just kind of wanted to have a different place to put it, because in the scriptures it says that they have to be baptized. But if the parents had the intention of baptizing their children and just it didn't happen before they passed away, how could they not receive the mercy of God, how could they not come back to the one that created them? So, yeah. Innocence. Anyone that's innocent has that connection to God. It's those who miss the mark, fall into sin, that we have to renew our relationship with God. And we can easily do that through the sacrament of reconciliation, which is tough for people to go to and do. But many people, almost all people, when they go come out of that sacrament, they feel a lot better and feel, they feel like their weight has lifted off their shoulders that they've been carrying around for so long that they didn't realize that they're carrying around.
It's kind of tough to ask, but is there a way of describing what, let's say, purgatory is like, or what it would be like?
I mean, there's lots of saints out there that they've said they've seen images or felt images of purgatory. The word purgatory is basically a purification, a purging. So maybe think of it like a refining fire more than like a damnation fire. Because all of us in this world have sinned. And just because we went to reconciliation doesn't mean the effects of our sin are also gone. So some of us will need to be purified before we can go and see God face to face. Because you don't want to go to the best banquet that you've ever been to, in t-shirts and jeans. You want to have the best possible stuff that you could ever wear to that banquet. So it's just like going to heaven. You want to be completely removed from any effects of the sin and of our sin before we see God face to face. And that's kind of where we talked about indulgences on one of these chats with Father Matt, to help us realize the effects of our sins, and then also pray prayers and do things to help us remove the effects of sin and remove that detachment that we have, or remove that attachment we have to sin.
I think people's image of... when people's image of, let's say, a person dies and they go straight to the pearly gates and St. Peter reads off the... True. Is that reality, or is that just a...
I would say that's just, how we can kind of comprehend what heaven is. Like, there's not really a explanation of how heaven is, but heaven is better than anything you could ever imagine. I mean, you're seeing God face to face, the beatific vision. So anything that's going on in the world and in your life does not matter because you're with God. It's hard to kind of comprehend, especially the way that we live in time and space, but eternity does not necessarily, I guess, matter. Or time and space doesn't matter in eternity.
You'll like this one.
All right.
Is being judgmental a sin?
Is being judgmental a sin? I mean, every action that we do is a judgment. So...
actual judging people.
Sure. But I mean, just kind of look at that. Like, everything that we do is a judgment. So, it's looking at the other person and are we, trying to take out the splinter in their eye before we take out the log in ours? How are we kind of assessing the situation? Like, are we just hating this person because of whatever they're doing or what they did in their life and not necessarily focusing on our stuff? I would say if we're doing things out of love, my people might think it is judgmental, but we're doing it because we care for the other person, not because we're trying to boost ourselves up, make us feel better. So it's really kind of the intention and the way we kind of view the situation. So it could be a sin and it couldn't be a sin. It could not be a sin. Does that make sense?
Yes. And the one I kind of beat to death, sadly, but but is the different colors of bishops, is that I'm assuming the answer is going to be yes, but is it intentional?
So like the things that the bishop wears?
Like your, some have the purple, some have the blue.
I don't know if anyone has blue, but I mean, yes. So different colors, different things represent the different, I guess, designations. There's not anything that I think designates a bishop from an archbishop. That's just kind of titles that they've gotten because they're either an archdiocese or a diocese. Like Cincinnati is an archdiocese because it was the first diocese west of the Appalachian Mountains. So it kind of has a little jurisdiction between all the Ohio bishops. But if we're looking at bishops and cardinals, so bishops wear the magenta zucchetto or the skull cap, or in the Italian it means little pumpkin, which is kind of funny. So they wear the magenta one, the bishop does, and the cardinal will wear the red one. The pope will wear the white one. And any priest can actually wear a black one. So if you want to buy me a zucchetto, I'll wear it around town for you there, Rocker. And I think we talked about this not on air, but like the zucchetto itself was kind of more of the old guy was balding and kind of just wore it to keep his head warm than anything else. Because I thought it was more towards the linkage to the Jewish faith and the yarmulke, but it was more practical than that. The church seems to be pretty practical in some aspects. Other times, we can get confused what the church kind of thinks they want us to do.
Now, here's one that I'm sure Bill would want me to ask you.
Yeah?
Did you actually wear the one that you got from the Pope?
I actually never put it on my head, but I had a couple of friends that have put it on their heads. I mean, not a big deal. Hopefully that will be on display soon. I have Don Leonard's. He's making a little display case for it, and he's going above and beyond anything I would have thought about for a display case, and he's been sending me some pretty cool shots of what it looks like. So I'm excited to be able to put that on display, and I need to print out these pictures that I took that I've been showing people of him like actually switching the zucchetto around. So he's going to engrave Pope Francis March 29th, 2017, the day that we actually did it. And it's a cool time. But he has a pretty big head, or the zucchetto is pretty big. It's a pretty big size.
Now, how would you describe, I mean, like, it's kind of hard to describe. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if you don't actually get to be up front with him, mm-hmm. you just kind of assume what kind of personality he has. Mm-hmm. How would you describe him in your eyes as far as personality wise?
Oh, for Pope Francis?
Yeah.
He's definitely a man of prayer. And like, I think he tries to reserve his energy when he can. But then when he is with people and greeting people, I think he tries to be as welcoming and as excited to see them as they are excited to see him. But so like when he was in the Pope meal, when he first came out, you know, he was out there waving people, trying to grab babies, kiss babies and stuff like that. But then he came to his chair and he gave a little reflection, and then they read some readings and translated what he said in different languages and things like that. And he was, you know, kind of in this prayerful state, this kind of meditative state. But then when they put him back on the Pope Mobile and to greet more people, he was right back at it. And just he wants to give the love of God to any person that he wants to encounter. And I think you can do that through just showing care for other people and showing that you you care about them and you want to be excited about them being in your presence just as much as they're excited about him being in their presence.
That's kind of a touchy one, but back in like 1978.
Okay.
Before Pope John Paul II was elected. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of bad things that was going on at the time. Like the Vatican Bank and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is the possible that kind of stuff is being done today, or is it been cleaned up?
So Pope Francis definitely is trying to remove ton of the bureaucratic red tape stuff that the Vatican has kind of always had. And I don't know if anyone like specifically meant to do harm or do anything wrong. It just kind of came to be. And it almost became so much of a, like, such snowballed, like, it became such a big deal that it's really hard to kind of peel and uncover all the layers that have been there. Because the Italians kind of, when they assess stuff, if it's not broke, they're not going to fix it. And they're just kind of go with the status quo. But Pope Francis really wants to kind of bring the Vatican to a place that is living out the Catholic faith and living out what Christians should be living out. And that necessarily wasn't the case. But I wouldn't pin it down to like one specific person. But it's becoming one person that's trying to do the better, but he has all kinds of delegates that's out there to help remove all this stuff that has been going on.
Now, in the United States, there's umpteen different conspiracy theories about what happened to President Kennedy. Now, there's also that same towards Pope John Paul I.
Yeah.
Of what happened to him.
Yeah. I mean, only Pope for 33 days.
Now, the Vatican, they say, doesn't like to talk about it.
True.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that widespread or is that kind of just...
I mean, I think the Vatican likes to keep the cards close to the chest with most things. They don't really kind of like to elaborate things unless they have to. I mean, anyone can kind of guess what happened to John Paul I. I mean, it also could be the Holy Spirit guiding. And if John Paul I, you know, had some ideas that wanted to be changed, that he could not change but thought he could, that could, you know, happen. I mean, there's stories back in the day, long, long ago, medieval times probably, that a pope became pope and wanted to, like, abuse the power, and before he was able to decree anything, he was struck dead. Did that happen to John Paul I? No. I mean, did the mafia happen? Did the mafia think he was going to do so much good that they would ruin kind of whatever they're trying to do? Your guess is as good as mine.
I don't know if you... Did you ever meet Mother Teresa?
I'd never met her, no. I was like 12 years old when she died, I think. It was 97, right?
So yeah, no.
No.
Now, is there a one person like that today that equals her today?
I mean, the widespread global recognition, I would say probably no. But I met a priest. His name's Father Michael Scanlon. He passed away in January. He didn't start Franciscan University of Steubenville, but he kind of just turned that university around to what it is today. And there are so many good Catholics that come out of it, and so many, so much of the working of God has came through his vision and his ideals that I could definitely see him being a saint. And I definitely met him. I've gone to confession with him, you know, had a couple of conversations with him. So in 1974, he knew that this university was going to close if it didn't do better and put God first. And now we're in 2017, and it's probably one of the most authentically Catholic universities that you can go to.
Okay, now I'm kind of going my area.
Oh, yeah.
Music's part of a lot of people's lives.
Definitely.
Now, I've noticed in the last, since I started going back again.
Yeah. Welcome back. It's good to have you back.
The music that when I was a kid compared to today is not there anymore.
Yeah.
Now, is that a generation thing, or is that a?
I really don't know how music kind of is today in the church. Seems like we just look at the music that we get in the missalettes, and they kind of dictate what stays and what goes. But this was never really a problem before Vatican II, because the hymns weren't sung as much. It was more, they call them introits and antiphons that were sung, and that each one was geared towards the specific Mass. So before Mass started, there was the entrance antiphon or introit that kind of sang and kind of gave an idea what the Gospel was. And then there was a communion one. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit different up here. We kind of stick with the oldies but goodies around here. Maybe not necessarily as old as that you were thinking. My experience in Cincinnati, they kind of moved around between more contemporary things and more older kind of hymnal music.
And I kind of had the same kind of thought as some other people. Come the first or second week of December.
Yeah.
Why is it that they're still not doing Christmas music?
So, Advent is the time that we prepare ourselves to receive Christ, not only in our hearts, but in our lives and in the world. So, during Advent, we're preparing ourselves. And we don't sing Christmas hymns until Christmas happens. And our Christmas season goes all the way until the baptism of the Lord. So it's a good 2 to 3 weeks that we can do Christmas hymns. But everyone kind of forgets Christmas, that December 26th. But our church is just beginning to celebrate Christmas at that
time. So it's a little behind the curve a little bit.
I would say that we're in the world, the secular world, is kind of anticipating too quickly.
Oh, well, that's no doubt.
Put it on you more than on us. Just like Easter. Like, Easter is kind of almost forgotten by everyone, but our church is still celebrating Easter. We celebrate for 50 days until we celebrate Pentecost, that when the Holy Spirit comes upon the apostles.
Don't worry, because let's say July, they already got Christmas stuff out in Walmart.
But I think that's all because of commercialism and money more than it is about actually celebrating a holiday. Because the more things are out there, the more, you know, the more opportunity people have to buy things. I don't know. There was a tradition of decorating the tree and not until December 24th. And then you'd have your tree up all the way through the Christmas season. Now it's like we have to have our Christmas tree up by Thanksgiving.
The day after.
Right.
Mom always did it the day after Thanksgiving.
Sure. I mean, and some radio stations are playing Christmas music right after Halloween. I mean, that's crazy. We want to help prepare ourselves so we can allow Christ into our lives and into the world. And not just like, bam, it's happened. Even before it happened.
I mean, you know, when you start doing a Christmas music a month before the actual holiday, mm-hmm. Not to mention there is maybe a select number of good Christmas songs,
mm-hmm.
And then there's 2,500 singers that are trying to do that same song.
It gets a little boring, doesn't it?
Well, it gets a little tedious.
Sure.
Yes.
No, definitely.
Yeah, I never understood why. You had, even with normal music, you had the same song covered by two people in the same year.
Yeah.
Well, that
doesn't make sense, does it?
That mm-hmm. shouldn't be done, for one thing.
Yeah. So I guess, in the end, the church wants to help us prepare for things. That's why we have Advent. That's why we have Lent. To kind of have us reflect on our lives and reflect how we can incorporate Christ more in our lives, how we can purge the things that shouldn't be in our lives and allow Christ into it more. So our world today does not celebrate that. I think they want more, they celebrate more of the mighty dollar than they do Christ in the different holidays. So I think that wraps up our series with Rockin' Rocker and the chat with Father Matt. It's been a good time chatting with you. Hopefully you guys will enjoy these conversations over the next couple of weeks. This is what, part four we just finished up.
Yeah.
So Rocker, thanks again for coming in.
No problem.
I know you probably have more and more questions you can ask, so maybe in the future we can kind of come back to address this, but it's been great. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
And joining me with the chat with Father Matt. If you have a subject that you'd like me to discuss on the chat with Father Matt, feel free to email me at vicar@fortrecoverycatholics.org or message me on Facebook at Fort Recovery Catholic Cluster. Also, we are on iTunes. The Chat with Father Matt podcast is out there, so please rate us and help us get this podcast out to others that would like to hear it. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week for the Chat with Father Matt.